Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for April 20th, 2026. I'm Phil Adler. The world has seen additional evidence this year that the United States is no longer the dominant power it once was. Confluence Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon-Hernandez joins us today to discuss how investors can manage this new reality. First, Patrick, this idea that the U.S. is no longer the world's hegemon, willing to sacrifice in the interest of world order. Well, that's not a new one for Confluence Investment Management. When did this idea begin to emerge as a central one for your investment strategy?
It really goes back well over a decade. At Confluence, we've been tracking U.S. political and economic behavior since at least the aftermath of the global financial crisis, when voters began to recoil from the visible and often hidden costs of global leadership as well. What changed wasn't a single election or a single foreign policy decision. It was a clear long-term pattern. U.S. voters became increasingly unwilling to absorb the fiscal cost, the military risks, the trade-offs, the domestic disruptions that came with maintaining global order. As that voter fatigue grew, U.S. policymakers responded rationally by adopting more nationalist, populist, and inward-looking policies across trade, immigration, defense, and fiscal priorities. So from an investment standpoint, that mattered enormously. Globalization, cheap energy, free trade, and stable sea lanes overstayed their welcome politically, long before they ended economically. So when investors ask when this theme became central, the honest answer is that it evolved slowly, then all at once. The last year simply stripped away the remaining illusions.
And you single out two events this year as clear evidence that the United States is much less able to control world affairs, even if we were willing to do so. One is the trade war with China. It seems like a long time ago. What did this standoff prove?
Well, what the 2025 trade war proved conclusively is that comprehensive power matters more than nominal GDP or military spending alone. China demonstrated that its control over critical minerals, especially rare earths, gave Beijing enormous asymmetric leverage. These inputs may be inexpensive on paper, but they're indispensable for semiconductors, electric vehicles, advanced weapon systems, batteries, and industrial machinery. When China imposed export licensing restrictions in response to the U.S. tariffs, it very quickly became clear that Western supply chains had no practical substitutes. Major manufacturers warned that production lines were weeks or even days from shutting down. So the U.S. ultimately had to back away, negotiate a truce, and accept materially less favorable trade terms than it was hoping for. That wasn't a failure of will, it was a failure of leverage. Now, the deeper lesson is that power today is multidimensional. China doesn't need to match the U.S. ship for ship or dollar for dollar if it can choke the arteries of modern industry. Investors need to internalize that reality.
And the second key event is, of course, the Iran war. I think it's fair to say that this war seems, at least to many, to be a miscalculation by the United States. What does this war tell you about the limits of U.S. power?
Well, the Iran war exposed perhaps the most fundamental requirement of hegemony: control of the global sea lanes. Iran demonstrated that it doesn't need nuclear weapons to exert decisive geopolitical leverage. Its ability to disrupt shipping through the Strait of Hormuz, which handles roughly 25% of global oil and gas flows, proved sufficient. Drone warfare changed everything. Iran no longer needs vulnerable ships or missile batteries. A few drone strikes were enough to paralyze insurers, trap hundreds of tankers, and effectively shut down the strait. Now, the result was immediate. Oil prices surged roughly 50% in a month, refined fuel prices doubled in many regions, and political pressure mounted worldwide. When the U.S. abruptly halted its offensive under the pretext of peace negotiations, the message was unmistakable. Washington could not enforce freedom of navigation without intolerable domestic and global costs. That doesn't mean the U.S. is weak, but it does mean that it no longer enjoys uncontested dominance.
Patrick, if these two events had not occurred, the U.S. power erosion might have been on a gentler slope. Do these dramatic confrontations this year place investors in an immediate decision-making mode instead of perhaps being able to delay fundamental changes in strategy?
Yes, absolutely. Absent these shocks, investors might have had years to gradually adapt. Instead, markets are being forced to price in structural changes right now. Supply chain redundancy, energy insecurity, block-based trade, and chronic inflation are no longer hypothetical risks. These events compressed what might have been a decade-long transition into a matter of quarters. Investors who hesitate may find themselves permanently behind the curve now.
Well, let's turn to investment implications. Should we assume that oil is going to be much more expensive for the long term and inflation will be higher as well?
Yes, we think so. The era of structurally cheap energy is over. Permanent risk premiums are now embedded in energy prices due to geopolitical choke points, defense spending, inventory rebuilding, and redundancy. That translates directly into higher and more volatile inflation. This is similar to the 1970s in structure, though not necessarily in magnitude. The key change is that efficiency is no longer the priority. Resilience is. Higher inventory, alternative routes, duplicated infrastructure, all of that costs money, and consumers ultimately pay the bill.
What price range can we expect for oil?
While precise forecasting is always risky, we believe oil will trade structurally higher than the pre-war norm. Instead of oscillating around $60 to $70 per barrel, markets should expect persistent pricing above that range, with frequent spikes well north of it during periods of disruption or political pressure. Importantly, volatility itself becomes a defining feature, which has major implications for capital allocation and risk management.
Well, how can we expect countries and corporations to react to these higher oil prices and these inflationary trends?
We should probably focus on three main responses. First, strategic reserves will expand as countries seek buffers against disruption. Second, corporations will hold greater inventories and favor domestic or allied suppliers, even at higher cost. And third, governments will pursue all of the above energy strategies. In other words, fossil fuels, nuclear, renewables, and they'll prioritize reliability over ideology. Efficiency falls, resilience rises, and inflation becomes structurally embedded.
As we look back at globalization, it was great for U.S. stocks. What about now?
Well, globalization inflated margins, extended supply chains, suppressed inflation, and boosted valuations. So yes, its reversal implies the opposite, though. Lower margins, higher costs, slower growth, and reduced willingness to pay premium multiples. That doesn't mean U.S. equities are unattractive, but leadership shifts toward value, energy, defense, and industrials, especially those benefiting from reindustrialization.
Well, it seems logical that green energy will make a comeback. What do you think?
Yes, but for a different reason than before. Green energy won't surge because it's fashionable, but because energy security demands diversification. Europe and Asia in particular are incentivized to reduce dependence on foreign hydrocarbons, and that creates selective opportunities, especially outside the U.S.
A stronger dollar, Patrick, really gave international stocks a boost in the months leading up to the Iran war. Should investors be more cautious now about international markets?
The way we think of it is cautious, yes, but not dismissive. Foreign markets are more value-oriented and commodity-heavy, which provides natural insulation. Strategic rotation, not withdrawal, is therefore the better approach. Energy-rich regions and firms able to relocate production closer to North America or Latin America look especially attractive to us.
Defense stocks, both here and overseas, seem poised for advancement, and Confluence has recommended this group for quite a while. But Iran and Ukraine have showed us that weaponry has changed in effectiveness. Are there divisions within defense stocks that you have identified that investors should pay special attention to? For instance, companies which specialize in manufacturing drones.
Absolutely. Traditional platforms remain necessary, but asymmetric technologies like drones and electric warfare, sensors, cyber capabilities, those are all now decisive. Investors, therefore, should focus on firms aligned with modern conflict realities, not legacy doctrines.
Will commodities take the place of fixed income as a safer haven for investors?
For diversification, yes. In an environment of volatile inflation and interest rates, fixed income struggles. Commodities, particularly precious metals and energy, offer better hedging characteristics. This doesn't eliminate bonds, but it changes the portfolio balance.
Finally, Patrick, returning to our central theme today, the limits of U.S. power and how investors should respond, is there a danger that investors might become too gloomy about prospects for the U.S. in this new world?
Definitely. The U.S. is still extraordinarily wealthy, innovative, energy-rich, and politically resilient. Relative decline does not equal absolute decline. The mistake is assuming the old world is returning, not recognizing that a different, still opportunity-rich world is emerging. Adaptation, not nostalgia, should be rewarded.
Thank you, Patrick. The title of this week's report is The War in Iran and the End of U.S. Hegemony. And you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.